Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to Aavas Financiers Limited Q2 and H1 FY 2022 earnings conference call. This conference call may contain forward-looking statements about the company, which are based on the beliefs, opinions, and expectations of the company as of the date of this call. These statements are not the guarantees of future performance and involve risks and uncertainties that are difficult to predict. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Sushil Agarwal, MD and CEO. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for participating on the earnings call to discuss the performance of our company for Q2 and H1 FY 2022. With me, I have Mr. Ghanshyam Rawat, CFO, Himanshu Agarwal, Investor Relations team, other senior member of the management team of Aavas. Also we have SGA, our IR advisors. The results and the presentations are available on the stock exchange as well as our company website, and I hope everyone has had a chance to look at it. I am happy to inform you that during the quarter, the company's long-term credit rating outlook was revised from AA- stable to AA- positive by CARE. I take this opportunity to thank all of you and our stakeholders for their continued trust and support. With the calibrated reopening of various states and the success of the nationwide vaccination drive, the economic activities has shown a robust and continuous improvement across the country. For quarter two FY 2022, we disbursed 901 crore rupees, registering a 35% year-on-year growth. This is almost 90% of disbursement in Q4 FY 2021. In terms of incremental business, we are very close to the level prior to second wave of COVID-19. All this while, we have maintained our operating metrics and delivered profit after tax growth of 31% year-on-year as per Ind AS accounting, and 22% year-on-year as per IGAAP accounting for half year financial year 2022. Further, with our philosophy of consistent growth, we registered AUM growth of 21% year-on-year as of September 2021. As mentioned during the earnings call of Q1 FY 2022, based on our regular interaction with the borrowers and repayment behavior exhibited by them during the first wave of COVID-19 FY 2021, we expected to see a similar improving trend in collections from Q2 FY 2022 onwards. In line with our expectation, one day past due has improved markedly from 12.67% in June 2021 to 8.88% in September 2021. From here on, we should witness a gradual improvement and hope to reach same level as March 2021 by March 2022, if there is no third wave in the subsequent quarters. I would now hand over the line to Ghanshyam, CFO, to discuss various business parameters in detail.
Thank you, Sushil. Good afternoon, everyone, and a warm welcome to our earnings call. During the quarter, company borrowed an incremental amount of rupees 8,899 million at 6.48%. As of September 2021, our average cost of borrowing stood at 7.17% on the outstanding amount of rupees 88,428 million. During the quarter, our long-term rating outlook was revised by CARE from AA- stable to AA- positive, while ICRA continued to maintain long-term credit rating AA- with stable outlook. Despite a higher short-term rating, A1+, we continue to maintain zero exposure to commercial paper as prudent borrowing practices. IGAAP to Ind AS reconciliation has been explained in detail for profit after tax and the net worth on slide number 31 and 33 of our presentations. Further, a few important parameters. As on 30th September 2021, total number of live accounts stood at 1,35,453. That is almost growth of 20% year-on-year growth. Total number of branches, 297. That is 38 new branches added in last 12 months. Employee count, 4627, 31% increase year-on-year. Assets under management grew 21% year-on-year to rupees 1,01,481 million as on 30th September 2021. Product wise breakup, home loans 72.1%, other mortgage loan 27.9%. Occupation wise breakup, salary 39.8%, self-employed 60.2%. Disbursements increased by 35% year-on-year to rupees 9,016 million in quarter 2 FY22, by 55% year-on-year to rupees 13,641 million for H1 FY22. As on 30th September 2021, our average borrowing cost 7.17% against our average portfolio yield of rupees 12.90 resulted in a spread of 5.73%. Borrowing, we are access to diversified and cost-effective long-term financing. We have strong relationship with various development finance institutions. Overall borrowing mix as on 30th September 2021 is 36.8% from term loan, 22.7% from assignment and securitization, 23% from National Housing Bank, and 17.6% from debt capital markets. Assets quality, one day past due stood at 8.88%, gross stage 3 stood at 0.96%, and net stage 3 stood at 0.72% as on 30th September 2021. During the quarter, resolution plan has been implemented for certain borrowers accounts as per RBI Resolution Framework 20, dated 5th May 2021. Such accounts with outstanding amount of rupees 1,482 million have been classified as a stage 2 and risk-based provision created as per regulatory and Ind AS accounting principles. Provisions. Total COVID-19 provision stood at rupees 148.2 million as on 30th September 2021. Total ECL provision including COVID-19 provision and provisioning for reservation framework 20 stood at rupees 700.5 million as on 30th September 2021. Liquidity of rupees 23,809 million as on 30th September 2021. Breakups are as below. Cash and cash equivalent of rupees 12,050 million. Unavailed CC limit of 1190 million, documented unavailed sanction from National Housing Bank 2550 million, documented unavailed sanction from other banks 8100 million. Profitability, profit after tax increased by 31% year on year to rupees 1522 million as on for H1 FY22 as per Ind AS accounting. As per IGAAP, PAT registered year-on-year growth 22% to 1,548 million for H1 FY22. ROA stood at 3.25 and ROE 12.25 for H1 FY22. ROA was 3.90 and ROE 14.66% for Q2 FY22. As on 30th September 2021, we are very well capitalized with a net worth of rupees 25,700 million. Our book value per share stood at rupees 325.7 rupees. Now, with this, I open the floor for Q&A. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and 1 on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and 2. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. Our first question is from the line of Abhijit Debrewal from Motilal Oswal. Please go ahead.
Yes, sir. Thank you for allowing me this opportunity. And Sushilji and team, first of all, congratulations on crossing this milestone of 10,000 crores in Asia. So my question was more around two things. First is the OnePlus PPD number. So in your opening remarks, you suggested that by the end of the year, we would want to go back to levels of about 6.4%, which was there, I think, at the end of last fiscal year. Just wanted to understand, is it more of a conservative guidance, or can we, I mean, kind of reach that threshold of 5% in OnePlus PPD that you keep guiding by the end of this year? That's my first question, sir.
Yeah. So, good afternoon, Abhijit. As you see, this quarter, we were able to reduce our OnePlus PPD number by 4%, and customer behavior pattern is improving month-on-month. The way I see our book is that out of 100,000, around 40,000 live customers, we have only 1,000 customers who has not paid the September month installment, current month installment. So that trend is very encouraging. So now, that is coming around 0.6, 0.7% of the customers. So 8.8 between and 0.67, so there is a gap of around 8%. So these customers are paying current month installments, and if somebody has one installment due or somebody has two installment due because of COVID and other circumstances in the past, we need to see how quickly they can recover out of that, and that will decide the path of our one-day past due number. But as management, we see that now this number will come down gradually, and we anticipate that around 0.5% per month, we can see if no third wave is there, then that number is there. But as a management, we are committed to give our 100% efforts, and it can bring better result also if the circumstances will improve.
Sure, sir. Sir, the second question was around the operating expenses that you have reported during the quarter. I mean, are these, I mean, higher or looking optically higher because you've been investing significantly in branch expansions and building up employee bench strength?
So, Abhijit, the way we always narrate our OpEx number is that we will continue to invest in technology, manpower, distribution, on a consistent basis. So like every year, we open 30-35 branches. So last year also, we opened 30 branches, and this year again, within first half, we have opened around 18 branches. And, so that will be there. The OpEx cost, because we have built up the capacity in last Q4 and Q3, and you know, H1, first half was impacted by COVID, and this time, because COVID impact was 45-60 days time, so we have not impacted the regular salary increments, bonuses, et cetera. So all those have been given. So it has three impacts. One is ESOP cost. So ESOP cost of around 3.5% is more than the Q4 in this cost. Second is 18 branches which we have opened, that additional cost. Normally, we used to open new branches in second half of the year, but this time, because we have prepared, so we opened this time. And third one is normal increment. Last year, increments were not there, but this year we have given full increments as per our company policy to all employees. So all these three things put together is there, and since Q1 number was less than the normal number of around 200 crore-250 crore rupees, so it's a denominator effect also. But consistent basis, we say that we can improve our OpEx percentage to a total asset by 25-30 basis points over a year-on-year basis over a period of next 2-3 years.
Sure, sir. That is useful. And sir, my last question is around the disbursements. I understand disbursements in 1Q were impacted by the second COVID wave, but as you have kind of guided in the past that we typically do disbursements of about 35%-40% of the full year disbursements in the first 6 months, which is H1, and the remaining, let's say 60-65%, in the second half of the year. So for this year as well, I mean, looking at, I mean, the kind of demand and the competitive landscape, will it be fair to assume that we will kind of continue to deliver on that run rate? And lastly, Sushil, if you can touch upon this new two new states, I mean, Odisha and Karnataka, that you have entered in this financial year. I mean, have you done any pilots already there? And after that, have we kind of opened our branches there?
So, Abhijit, on disbursement side, normally, yes, it is same. First half is 40% and second half 60% kind of numbers. And we are on same trajectory for this year. And since first quarter was impacted with a one-month disbursement number, so might be second quarter, second half number can be better than that also. Second, I want to touch upon our state opening and branch opening policy again. We are consistent in our approach. Every 5 years, we open four new states. So first 5th year of operation, we started Rajasthan, Gujarat, Maharashtra, MP. And after from 6 to 10 years of operation, which completed, which we have completed in 2021, we started UP, Uttarakhand, Chhattisgarh, and Haryana. So now this is third span of our control. So for next 5 years term, we will again open four new states. So in that journey, we have started two new states this year, Karnataka and Odisha. And we see a lot of potential. We have seen a data through analytics model, and we are confident that these markets have lots of opportunity in Tier 2 to Tier 5. And at the same time, the customer behavior is also in line with our philosophy. So we will add another two states, maybe 1 year hence or 2 years hence, but we'll continue our philosophy of developing four new states every 5 years in the journey.
Thank you, Sushil. This is very useful. And again, congratulations and wish your team the very best. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is on the line of Aditya Jain from Citigroup. Please go ahead.
Sir, in the maybe a small point, but the GS1 plus GS2 coverage is up a little bit quarter over quarter. It's a very small amount, but given the recovery from GS3, probably GS2 should also have moved down. So we have voluntarily increased coverage. Or is the mix of GS1 plus GS2 actually increased towards GS2 a little bit?
So you are asking that stage 2 provisioning has increased, that way?
Stage 1 plus 2 provisioning has increased, yes.
Okay. Yeah, as I mentioned in the commentary, our pool which has been given a restructuring 148 crore rupees, against which we have created 20 crore rupees provision, entire thing is lying at a stage 2.
So
with that additional provision, the ratio got increased basically.
Then so when you talk about 30 to 35 branches being added every year, so for the next 2-3 years, that might give us maybe close to 15% branch growth. And then if we are let's say aiming for 30-35% kind of disbursement growth, the disbursement per branch would have to touch between 1.1 to 1.5 crore per month. So just your thoughts on that, just in terms of capacity utilization, where are branches now and how you see that changing?
So Aditya, we always say that we will be consistent in our AUM growth, which will be 20-25% growth. Over a period of time since we listed, we always say 20-25% AUM growth. And for that kind of AUM growth, whatever disbursement number is required, it is a combination of two things. One is new disbursement, and second is containing the prepayment rate of the existing book. Because see, last 2 years, we have reduced our prepayment rate significantly in our portfolio, which has helped us, despite doing calibrated disbursement growth, we are able to achieve our AUM growth. So in the future also, we will be doing the same. But the growth, how it will come? So growth has three elements to come. One is distribution, which is so next 3 years anyway another 100 branches will be opened. Second is whatever branches we opened in last 3 years, it has lacked efficiency. The first year when we open the branch, it operates around 50%. Second year 60-70%, and third year onward it reached more than 85-90% of achievement. So that lag efficiency will come. Fourth, because of technology and other processes and investment in that side, we get other efficiency on the book. And fourth one, which is a positive one for us significantly, is that our borrowing costs coming down, which also gives us opportunity to have much better customer segment, and which we like more salary customer and more former income segment customer, which earlier we were not able to do because of our cost of borrowing. So I think all these four elements puts us in a framework where we can consistently deliver 20-25% AUM growth in the near to short-term future.
But it's just to clarify, the increase in efficiency, you're talking about 50, 60, 70, 80, 90. So the base, the 100% that you assume in that is how much as of now?
So we have five categories of branches. Branches which has potential up to 1 crore, branches which has potential up to 2 crore, branches which has potential up to 5 crore, branches which has more than 5 crore potential. So it's a mix of all those kind of segments. But yeah, technically speaking, with 300 branches, this should be around 1.5 crore rupees per branch at 85-90% capacity utilization.
Got it. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question is from the line of Kunal Shah from ICICI Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, good afternoon. Firstly, in terms of restructuring, I think that has come lower than what we have been indicating. Obviously, it's reflected in terms of the collection efficiency, the way we have seen 1 plus DPD movement and requirement being lower. But was there any movement from the earlier restructuring as well? Or when we look at it, only 37 odd crores for this quarter, incremental, is it all the incremental, or there has been some slippages or maybe repayments which have happened from earlier restructuring, and this quarter would be higher than 37 odd crores?
So you are right, Kunal. From the previous restructuring which we have done, around 5 to 7 crore rupees of customer has prepaid their loans. So incremental number is 5 to 7 crore rupees more than what you can add directly from the Q2 and minus Q1.
Okay, but it's only 5 crores, so that's hardly clear.
Yeah.
Okay, got that, yeah. Okay, and secondly, in terms of MSME, when we look at it, now we are getting towards the disbursements of almost 100 crores a quarter. So it's coming up, last time it was 34-35 crores. So how should we see this business segment scaling up? And this quarter we had seen the uptick on the mortgage loan side, ex of MSME as well. So are we deriving more comfort, and we should see growth coming back significantly in the in that segment too?
So Kunal, you will see traditionally in our company, H1 is a little bit less on housing loan and more on MSME and LAP loan. And since we are more on the self-construction housing side, and after monsoon and all those things, then H2 picks up for the housing construction per se. So in the H2, normally our housing loan disbursement in proportion of total disbursement becomes high, and overall it remains 70-75% home loan or 25-27% of non-home loan. So I think we will be in the same trajectory. In the non-housing loan segment, we have now two segments primarily, three segments. One is LAP, which used to be earlier 70% and top of loans somewhere around 20-25%, and MSME was less. But our MSME is also 100% backed by housing mortgages which customer has, customer is living in. So difference for us in LAP and MSME is that second is first, end use is always confirmed for the business purpose. Second, the tenure is less, 7 years around for the MSME customer. And third is we check all the government compliances like Udyam Aadhaar, GST returns, etc. So that segment we are focusing rather than LAP in our non-housing loan segment. But going forward, again, we are committed that housing should be 70 to 75% and non-housing loans should be 25 to 27%. And in that, maybe 40% will be MSME, 40% will be home loan or mortgage loan, and 20% will be top-up loans. But since last almost 15 months, we are very slow on giving enhancing our exposure on the existing customer base because of the COVID situation. So we will review every quarter, and once we will comfortable that normal business scenario is there and customer requirement is genuine for the productive use, not for the distress purpose of the top floor, top of loan, we can again, we will again go back to the 4-5% of our loan on the existing customer to the top of loan.
Sure. And in terms of maybe the negative list which was there in terms of the non-housing part, so is it like now the underwriting standards they have been revised, and they have made maybe earlier the way they were stringent, in fact they have been relaxed a bit, and we should start seeing more approvals coming through in that segment because of the stance, change in stance purely?
So Kunal, so in that segment, we have improved our filter after COVID. Yeah. So say like earlier, there may be 3 filters for being the case. Now we are using 6 filters for these cases. So we have not reduced our due diligence and criteria. It's a natural demand which is coming up. And since we have a very large distribution base, we are sourcing almost 12,000 files per month. And increasing, this number is increasing quarter on quarter. So it's a natural demand. We have not filtered our selection criteria for the business.
Sure. And one last question in terms of this geographical additions to the branches. So again, it's primarily coming in Karnataka and Odisha, and there's hardly been any additions in the existing locations. So broadly, I think you have been earlier articulating that it would be like 70-30 kind of a ratio. So would we see the catch-up in the existing locations as well in terms of the branch additions, or maybe there the growth will largely be driven by the productivity improvement?
So Kunal, you are right. As we say, 30 branches every year we will open. Next 5 years we will open 150 branches. Out of 150 branches, in the new states, we will have 50 to 55 branches, and rest 90 to 100 branches will be in the existing states. So existing states expansion of the branches will happen in H2. The H1, we have started new state branches likewise. So we are consistent in that approach.
Okay, got that. Okay, yeah, thanks. Thanks and all the best. Yeah.
Thank you. Our next question is from the line of Vikram Subramanian from Spark Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Thanks for taking my question. So a part of my question has already been answered. You just mentioned about the split between home loans and other mortgages. And in 2H, probably the cycle will correct back and there will be more incremental home loan disbursement. I just want to ask a follow-up to that. If you look at that in tandem with the salaried versus non-salaried split, there the salaried has increased significantly in the past 1 year. So should we read it as, you know, a bit to move towards a bit of higher yield lending to other mortgage loans, but at the same time keeping, you know, risk under control by doing more of salaried other mortgages? Is that a strategy that we are following, or this is they are not correlated, and you know, it'll both of these numbers will just correct back to the previous levels of 35% on salaried and 25% on other mortgages. Could you please give some explanation on
that? Yeah, yeah. So, first of all, there is no correlation between this. Actually, I have told that now our cost of borrowing has significantly come down. And with that, the new states where which we have opened, in the new states, we focus more on less riskier portfolio for first 3 or 4 years in the operation. So that's where our this salary proportion from 35 to 40 or 39% has increased. And I think so going forward, as our rating will improve and cost of borrowing will further come down, maybe this ratio can again further move up to 42-58. But right now, we are seeing that this should be consistent, 40-60 ratio. And we are okay with that kind of risk and profile mix in our portfolio going forward also.
Got it. So the other mortgages might come down a bit faster, but salaried might remain at this 39-40% range for a slightly more medium-term period.
Correct.
I can assume
that? Correct, yeah. Correct.
Okay, got it, sir. That was it. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question is from the line of Karthik Chalapa from Bona Vista Fund Management. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you very much for the opportunity, sir. Three questions from my side. Firstly, on a like-to-like basis, how have the loan yields of the home loan and other mortgage loans varied year on year?
So, Karthik, good afternoon. So, percentage of home loan versus non-home loan?
I just want the loan yield. How has that changed for home loan and other mortgage loan on a year-on-year basis?
Yield or home loan and non-home loan percentage? What?
Yield.
So, Karthik, say home loan yield was around 12% and non-home loan yield was 14.75%. And in the previous years and current year also, home loan yield is 11.92 and non-home loan yield is 14.78%.
Okay, so which means on a specific product basis, year on year, there hasn't been much change in the yield of the individual products, right?
Yeah, it's almost same.
Okay, and generally, sir, you said the mix is changing away from LAP to MSME loans within the other mortgage loans. What is the difference in the yield for a typical MSME loan versus LAP?
Karthik, it's around 100 basis point difference. The major difference is tenure. So in LAP, the tenure is around 10 to 12 years. In MSME loans, the tenure is 5 to 7 years. And MSME loans, because there we can check the end use specifically and we can also borrow shorter tenure money, like 3 to 5 years for that kind of portfolio. So the yield is 100 basis points less, but borrowing cost is further 100 to 150 basis points less for that kind of portfolio, for that kind of tenure. So we are trying to maintain a spread, which is 5%. As I've told you, because of COVID, though we have already passed on 25 basis points to all our customers as per 2 ALCO meeting recommendation in last year, still our spread is around 5.73%. If there is no COVID wave 3, we would like to pass on this benefit to the existing customer base as we have done in last 10 years history. So we match borrowing versus lending spread 5% on particular profile also, portfolio also, and very granular level. We don't work like we have disbursed at some yield and then we will ask treasury to borrow according to money. Whatever price treasury can borrow the money, we create portfolio and product around it and work around it.
Excellent. This is very clear, Sushilji. The second question is, if I look at the securitization income booked this quarter of about 33 crore, on a securitized volume of about 170 crore, the yield works out to be one of the highest that we have earned in any quarter. what it would explain this? Is it the nature of the portfolio that we have securitized? Could you give us some color?
Yeah, so Karthik, it was mostly portfolio of LAP and MSME, where we were having the yield of around 14.5%, around 15%, and the borrowing cost was 7.4%, so around 7.5%-8% kind of spread.
Okay, so it's relatively the higher yielding richer portfolio, which we have securitized this quarter, which explains the higher yield then?
Correct, correct.
Okay. The last one, Sushil, is typically when we enter new states, our strategy has always been that for the first 12-18 months, we don't give any targets, we scan the market, et cetera. But this is probably the first time that we have entered a state with 11 branches initially itself, which is actually quite large, because even in some of the existing states like Chhattisgarh or so, the number of branches are still single digits. So any color on what is so special about Karnataka that you see, that you have chosen to enter with, let's say, some as high as 11 branches?
Yeah. So Karthik, first is, there are two part of this 11 branches. Five are contiguous distribution approach, because we are working in Maharashtra since last seven, eight years, and there is one portion of Karnataka which is attached to Maharashtra is Kolhapur branch, and we have shifted the same Kolhapur state head for us to this branch. They are Belgaum,
Hubli,
Hubli,
Davangere.
So that side of the distribution is contiguous distribution for us. We were working in 50-100 km of range in that market. We understand that market very well. And the new market which we opened is around four, five branches in that side. And that is where we have opened 11 branches in Karnataka. But we see out of this, around six branches are in contiguous distribution approach and five branches as a new state opening.
Got it. This is very, very clear. Thank you very much, Sushil and Ghanshyam, and wish you and the team at Aavas a very happy Diwali. That's all from my side.
A very happy Diwali to you also, Karthik.
Thank you, Karthik.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Bhavya from Fortress Group. Please go ahead.
Sorry, it seems the line
for Bhavya is on hold. We will move to our next caller. That is from the line of Bharat Shah from ASK Investment Managers. Please go ahead.
Hi, Sushil. Namaskar.
Namaskar.
Namaskar, Ghanshyam. Sushil, now that we, it does appear that we as a country are reaching towards hopefully more normalcy, and all businesses are looking forward to aspirational and higher trajectory of growth, this may be a good time to revisit our original kind of a lending model in terms of ROA, ROE metrics. So, if you believe that barring some rude surprises again on the pandemic side, and if you believe that home loans in particular are showing a greater propensity for growth in the lending side, can you structurally, what kind of model are we looking at in terms of spread, net interest margin, cost to income ratio, and the credit cost, and eventually culminating into ROE? In your case, ROE is little peculiar because of the excess liquidity on the balance sheet. Otherwise, ROE also would have been a more critical outcome out of that. But if you can link it to that, to ROE metrics, that would be helpful.
Yeah. So, good afternoon, Bharat. If we'll say, our current quarter ROE is already 15%, which we always to say that we will reach after two, three years, 15%-16% kind of consistent ROE trajectory. So we have already reached this quarter despite COVID wave two and et cetera. So The way I see the business, at least even for next 3 years, if we are able to deliver 20 to 25% growth trajectory, we will be double the book from 10,000 to 20,000 crore rupees. And on that book, if even if we can maintain 5% spread, which we used to maintain last 10 years, but last 1.5 years it is more than 5%, 5.75%, despite we have transferred 25 basis points already to our customer base. So I think that kind of a spread for another 3 years, if we can maintain. And credit cost, I am hopeful that we can contain our NPA around 1%, and credit cost should not be more than 20-25 basis points, which was our earlier trajectory in the past 10 years. OPEX side, we have the scope of going 25-30 basis points down year-on-year basis. That will give us leeway even if spread comes down by 75 basis points from today 5.75 to 5%. Still, we can deliver our ROA numbers, and ROA should incrementally increase with the increase of leverage in the balance sheet. So we have already reached quarter-on-quarter basis 15% kind of ROE. So maybe next 2 to 3 years, we can reach maybe up to 18%, 17%. And I hope in this kind of business, that kind of ROE is reasonable for long-term sustainable growth in our business. And on the growth side, if you will see, we are very consistent. Even in COVID time, we were able to deliver 22% AUM growth. We always keep bench strength on our distribution side, 25 to 30%. And we always say that if the tough time will come, if the more competition will come, still we can deliver our numbers. And if both the scenario is favorable, we can over-deliver our numbers. So based on that, I think we are hopeful, given that 20-25% growth trajectory over a period of 3 years, with consistent operating matrices.
So 20-25% business growth, about 5.5-6% kind of margin, and any pressure on the margin hopefully neutralized by cost savings as a cost to income ratio. Credit cost of about 25 basis points and NPA, net NPA below 1%. That would be the kind of a summary of the, if you assume that the picture now is normal and in fact actually looking better and more progressively interesting in terms of the growth. Is that the metrics that you think you'll be working with?
Yeah, sir. We hope so. If the situation will not get worse from here, I think next 3 years it should be stable growth trajectory for us.
And what kind of ROA it will imply?
Sir, ROA, we always used to say that we will be consistently delivering 2.5% plus ROA. But since you know our leverage is less, so right now we are giving 3% plus. But hopefully, ROA into leverage is the trajectory of ROE, which I am explaining you to, that we will be 15 to 18% kind of ROE range for a period of next 3 years.
Okay. But, you know, Sushilji, in a business like yours, essentially long-term lending for mortgage area, low interest rate environment in case of excess equity capital on the book is actually hurtful, because it doesn't give you enough opportunity to put leverage in the balance sheet and enjoy the spread of the lending rates. Therefore, in low interest rate kind of environment, excess equity capital on the book is a source of some kind of limitation. Unless we grow at a rate much higher than return on equity, we will not be able to soak up or use excess liquidity or excess equity capital on the book. Therefore, our growth rate has to be significantly higher than return on equity in order for us to use excess equity capital and therefore use a more judicious kind of balance sheet where there is a little bit more leverage rather than too much excess equity capital. That in turn drives ROA as well as in turn drives ROE. Won't you think that will be essential?
Yes, sir. I agree with your point, but since last 5 years, every year something or other is coming, like pulse demonetization, then liquidity crisis, then too large HFC fiasco, then COVID 1, then COVID 2. So if things will normalize, maybe over a bit of next 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, things, we can think of other side. But till that time, as a management, we see that survival risk is more important for us, and a little bit less leverage gives us a comfort of sustaining long-term business. But I agree with your point. If next 18 to 24 months, things, doesn't have any of this kind of survival events in the industry, we are in agreement with your advice.
So, Sushilji, that is where I'm bringing the question again. Given the fact that we have excess equity capital and we've been very judicious in underwriting our business by proper credit selection so that it doesn't end up damaging the it doesn't end up reflecting in higher credit costs, which is the right thing to do to maintain that hygiene and discipline. But unless we grow it not more like 20%, but probably materially higher than that, so that we are well over the return on equity in terms of the growth rate sustained, so that that becomes a source for improving both our ROA and ROE, so that financial structure becomes more balanced rather than lopsided in favor of equity capital.
Yes, sir. So, as I mentioned, if situation will improve in 18 to 24 months, we will see to it. But, sir, as one thing you need to appreciate that because of this capital and low leverage, during COVID time, we were able to get 2 rating upgrades. And we have been given more trust by the lenders that in during pandemic time, everybody was ready to fund us and at the much cheaper rate on the balance sheet. So that borrowing cost impact, which has significantly down, has also improved the shareholder return. But I agree with your point. And whenever we are coming next to Mumbai, we will come and seek your advice and we'll see how we can improve the things in future also.
No, thank you, Sushilji. Always pleasure meeting with you. One last point I'll make. Given our very prudent and wise lending practices, conservative asset liability match, duration, discipline that we maintain, all these are hugely praiseworthy aspects of the way relatively smaller lending organization like yours, but is very prudently and intelligently managed the situation. The way I try to sort out the dilemma of excess equity capital on your books resulting in lower return on equity, optically it results in a lower return on equity. I try to look at your total balance sheet and divide it into as if normatively your normal debt equity ratio for the mortgage lender should at least be 6 to 8 times the equity capital, if not more. And I try to theoretically split your total capital accordingly and try to rework real ROA and real ROE. But at some stage, that imagine ROE in my head and still ROE have to kind of come together. And that dilemma can be only the growth rate is high.
Correct. So, sir, I will also do the calculation like you. So, by this year end, we should be somewhere around 12,000 crore a year and around 1,000 crore rupees of FDR on the balance sheet for the future lending. So, 13,000 crore book. Divided by 6, 2,200 crore capital. Right now, we are having 2,570 crore capital, out of which 170 crore rupees is securitization excess money. So 2,400. So only 200 crore capital is excess. And I think that is sufficient that we should always keep in a buffer for the next year growth, even on 12,000 crore, if we next year grow 20 to 24% or 25%. So the next year profit, again, it will be reaching in the same ratio which you are talking.
Thank you. Mr. Shah, request you to join the queue for any follow-up. Our next question is from the line of Shubhranshu Mishra from Systematics. Please go ahead.
Thank you for the opportunity, Sushilji and Ghanshyamji. So, two questions. First is on the customer segment. If you can dwell on this, what category of customers do we have in salary? How do we split it into PSU, private, government employees? What are their average salary levels and what are the average income and age when they are onboarded? And similarly, if you can dwell upon the self-employed segment, what kind of industries are they from? Are they more of traders, more dependent on manufacturing? What are their average income levels? What are their average family incomes? And do we look at cash flows or do we look at GST returns or do we look at a mix of GST and cash flows while underwriting them? That's the first. Second question is, given the fact that we will be doing some amount of outside city documents, so these documents sometimes also happen to be slightly haphazard. So how do we go about understanding those documents, because the law stipulates that we should go back in history for 13 years. So how do we understand the entire history of the document, legality of the document? How many lawyers do we have which are on roll, off roll? How do we understand that? And how do we store these documents as well? Is it a centralized storage or a decentralized storage? So these are the two questions. Thank you.
Yeah. So you asked enter annual report in 2 minutes time, but I will try to explain. So firstly, we have salaried 39% customer in which our average ticket size is around 9 to 10 lakh rupees. Average installment level is around 11,600 rupees. We have income to installment ratio of around 33%. So average salary level around 30 to 35,000. So in this, we have both public sector and private sector, but we don't differentiate between that wise. This is whosoever is getting salary into the bank account and that is getting credited for more than 12 to 24 months, we treat them as a salaried customer, and apart from that, then we do the CIBIL and bureau score check. So that is the profile of salaried customer. Now, in the self-employed segment, into 60%, we have around 40 profiles which we track. So none of the portfolio is more than 5 to 6% in the book. And last 32 quarters, quarter on quarter, profile wise, geography wise, we input the data into our analytics algorithm method. While assessing these customers, we do cash flow based accounting. In our underwriting team, after 400 underwriters, I think more than 300 are chartered accountants. And now we have processed more than 4 lakh files in orbit of last 11 years. So we have our own data, learning, and everything put into analytics. So that helps us assessing the self-employed customer in our portfolio. Coming back to your second question, from the very first inception, since we started working in Tier 2 Tier 5, we have a deep understanding and knowledge of areas where we work on the property titles. Right now in company, we have more than 100 lawyers and 300 law firms work for us. In most of the cases, we have two legal reports, one from in-house lawyer, one from outside lawyer. To tell you about that particularness of the how we check, the best criteria is how many cases got rejected in SARFAESI processing while you have done that. So in last 11 years, not a single case against order passed against us by any DRTO and collector for the title correctness of the document. I think that emphasis that now we have assessed 4 lakh customers and we have disbursed around 190,000 customers and live account are 140,000 in the book. We have significantly got understanding, knowledge, and around the legal title where we fund. We don't fund any property where we cannot use the SARFAESI proceedings. Hope I have answered your question.
Of the documents, is it centralized or decentralized?
Yeah, we store documents centralized at Jaipur. We have Iron Mountain facility, which is the world's best storage programmer in the country and the world. We store our documents with them.
Thank you. Mr. Mishra, request to rejoin the queue for any follow-up. Our next question is from the line of Piran Engineer from CLSA. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Good afternoon and congrats on the good set of numbers. Sir, just a couple of questions. One is on your hiring strength. You all said you hired about 30% is your employee growth, right, on a year-on-year basis. So I just wanted to understand that, you know, when does operating leverage then kick in? Because our employee count has been growing faster than the AUM, faster than the branch count growth. And ideally, out of the 1,000 odd employees hired last year, you know, could you give us a brief function task?
Yeah, so, Piran, normally, we always say we will keep on investing in distribution because we want to run this company for next 25-30 years. So there will always be investment in distribution according to branches, according to business, according to circumstances. Last 6 months, there is a tough competition around the market. And as our policy, we say that we create bench strength always for our businesses. And in the difficult time also, we will deliver. In the difficult time is not there, we will over-deliver. So that is the reason the staff strength has grown more than the AUM growth number or disbursement growth number, but the distribution has also increased on the other side. Second is most of it. So if you see our current manpower strength, so it is 2:1, 2% in the business side and 1% in the support side. So that is the breakup we keep always when we hire our manpower.
No, I got that, but if I have to just think about it bottoms up, if we've opened 30-35 branches, each branch might have 5-6 employees, so that's maybe 200 employees here, and in some centralized functions, etc., maybe another 50 or 100. So, or if I could ask you another way, maybe over the next 3 to 5 years, what sort of an employee count growth do we see?
So we are saying that we will grow our AUM by 20-25%. Though in practicality, we say that our employee growth should be less than the AUM growth because we are using the technology also and that will also play a role. So that's the fact. Current growth is because we have created a buffer because of this heightened competition in the market. And everybody wants Aavas employee as a in their framework for all the smaller to larger HFCs. So this we have as a prudent practice on the management side. We have taken that step. But yes, going forward, employee growth should be around 15-20% vis-a-vis AUM growth of 20-25%.
Okay, that answers it. And so my second question is actually more of a clarification. You said that the spreads today are 5.7, 5.8, and you are targeting about 5% or so. Is that something that happens in the near term or more in the medium term? And if that does happen in the near term, you know, how should we think about your ROA and ROE? Do we expect ROE, which is 15% now, to sort of again drop because a 70-80 basis points spread compression is quite severe?
Piran, if you have heard correctly, I have told that whatever is fair, we will bring it down. We will save that much of cost in the OPEX.
Okay, so about 20-25 every year.
Yeah.
Got it, got it. Okay, that's it from my end. Thank you and all the best.
Thank you. The next question is in the line of Shripal Doshi from Equiris. Please go ahead.
Hello, sir. Good evening and thank you for giving me the opportunity. So my question was on the restructuring front, what is the nature of restructuring? Like how much moratorium or extension will be given to our customers?
So it's in the form of moratorium because in the COVID phase, one customer has taken the moratorium and that is the language they have correctly understood. So it is in the same line of that. The moratorium is from 3 to 9 months kind of vintage according to customer request and past experience and how many months moratorium he has taken in the COVID phase one.
Okay. Sir, second question was with respect to, like, as you alluded that we are focusing on the non-HL front, we are focusing more on MSME. So how about the underwriting? Is it done by the same credit underwriting officer at the branch, or do we have a separate structure or infrastructure to, because this would require a different set of understanding.
So we have the strength of underwriting informal income business class since inception. As you know, we have a 65% self-employed debt to informal income, and that's where all 75% plus team are chartered accountant at the ground level as a credit officer. So for us, in housing loan, when we give, we check and use either it will be for construction in 5 stages, it's for purchase, then Lord will do the transaction. And same is here in MSME, we are assessing the same customer on the basis of cash flow, GST, Udyam Aadhar card, business is same. But what is the difference between LAP and MSME? MSME, we are able to check the end use of the fund which we are giving for a business loan. In the LAP, it can be used for personal purposes also, for daughter's marriage also, for some other incidences also. So there, tenure was high and less probability of taking the end use. In MSME, we have more end use checking capability and tenure is less.
Got it. So one last question was with respect to branches. So what percentage of our branches would be mature and how do we define, like, you know, that we consider basically a branch having an AUM of 200 crore, for example, would be a mature branch? And what percentage of our branches today would be mature? And what would be the OPEX upon AUM and CI ratio for that, for those set of branches?
So, Shripal, for us, I personally consider a branch mature when it is positive ROE. So, every quarter we do the ROE calculation of each of the branches with fully loaded cost of entire balance sheet. And mostly in Tier 2 to Tier 5, within 12 months, all our branches become positive ROE branches. And for metro branches, yes, it takes 2 to 3 years to reach that kind of level. So out of 300 branches, more than 85% branches are ROE positive. And as you know, in last 12 months, we have opened another 40 branches. So that I'm hopeful 90% of it will become ROE positive in next 12 months, and remaining 30-40 branches which are not positive ROE in more than 12 months, we are working as a team. As I told, some of branches will be metro branches, so anyway their target ROE is 2 years.
So sir, like, just a follow-up question there. So what is, like, the ideal OPEX upon AUM that we're looking at? What percentage of our branches would be already achieving that sort of metric?
So I will just give you one example. So for the understanding, so say if a town has 4 lakh population, divide by 5, 40,000 households, and when we open a branch, we say in next 15 years, say we will cover 5% of the population. So 2,000 home loans we need to give in 15 years. So divide by 180 months, we need to do 10 to 15 cases per month. So that is the potential for us for that branch. So means if the branch will do 1.5 crore business, we will earn 2 to 2.5% fee. So we make a criteria that this branch cannot have cost more than 3 lakh rupees. So now when we take the OPEX, it should be 25 to 30,000 rupees rent. Other OPEX will be 15,000. Then we will keep around 1.5 lakh rupees cost as a manpower cost. All those should deliver in next 1 year around 1.5 crore rupees kind of volume, which will fetch us maybe 2 lakh, 3 lakh rupees fee, which should take care of entire branch OPEX. And that's our definition of viability of the branch. And because it's a 15 year VC, so if your branch is ROE positive in the first year, then next 15 years lending minus borrowing, everything should come to company as a spread.
Thank you, Mr. Doshi. Request to join the queue for any follow up. The next question is from the line of Vikas Kasturi from Focus Capital. Please go ahead.
Namaste Sushilji and Namaste Ghanshyamji. Congratulations on a fantastic milestone and I wish you a very happy Diwali. Sir, I had a question. So you have a branch in Jayanagar in Bangalore, which is an upmarket kind of a locality. So what is the rationale for setting up that branch? And the second question is, sir, you have a subsidiary called Avas FinServe. So what are your plans with respect to that? That's it, sir. Thank you.
Yeah. So anywhere new state we open, we need to open a regional office, which will be in the mainstream of the capital of that state. So Jayanagar branch will work like a regional office for entire Karnataka operation for us. That's where we opened a Jayanagar branch there. And the second question is FinServe. So we have FinServe. We have applied a license to RBI, and whenever they will approve, we will do MSME business in the subsidiary, which will again be backed by mortgages. So that's the idea. Still, the application is with RBI. So whenever it will come, we will operate.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The line of Siddharth as an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Sushilji, congratulations on good set of numbers and thank you for taking my questions. Most of the questions are answered. I just had one small question. On the upfronting income of fresh assigned loans, what we see is about 33 crores that is recognized in H1 FY22 on a securitized volume of 175 crores. However, we also see about 36 crores of reversal in the P&L. So if you could throw some light on that, and is the company following a contractual cash flow or a behavioral cash flow pattern for recognizing this income?
So we work on behavioral cash flow. So we have already, say, like 2,000 crore rupees of book, which is assignment,
okay,
for which income is upfrontly booking. So whatever we have booked upfront, every quarter there will be reversal. So whatever we have booked. So this,
what is it?
So that reversal will come every quarter. So like first quarter, we don't have the new assignment. So 18 crore rupees was the reversal on the existing assignment. So this quarter again, 18 crore of reversal, but 33 crore rupees is the upfronting income. So that's where you are seeing H1 36 crore rupees of reversal.
Understood. Just follow up on that. So, you know, in H1 FY21 last half year, we had about 150 crores of securitization against which income of 18 crores was booked. You know, there is a vast difference between 18 crores on 150 crores against 33 crores on a 175 crore securitization. So if you could help me explain that, that would be great. Thank you.
You are talking volume, securing volume versus income booked in this quarter, in this half year?
Yes, yes. So 33 crores and 175 crores is what we have booked. However, if you see last year, it was about 18 crores in 150 crores.
We will try to extend this question again. I think this question was raised earlier also. In this quarter, we have assigned MSME and lab group, which were having a higher yield and got securitized at 7.4%. Spread was around 8% plus. Last year, when we done assignment of 155 crore rupees around in the last year H1, which was purely home loan book, where spread was just 5%. So you see a similar quantum was securitized in this H1, but income was much higher.
Understood. That helps. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, that would be our last question for today. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Sushil Agarwal for closing comments. Thank you and over to you, sir.
Yeah, so thank you all for attending the call. To summarize, at Aavas, we aim to be one of the key enablers in broadening and deepening of credit facilities to unserved and underserved customers in the semi-urban and rural areas. Further, we will continue to make investments in digital initiatives and distribution as that will further improve the operational efficiency and enable us to serve our customers even better. Thank you so much for your time. For any further information, we request you to get in touch with Himanshu in our investor relationship team or SGA or IR advisor, and they would be happy to help you. For entire family of Aavas, here we are wishing you a very, very happy Diwali and a prosperous New Year. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Aavas Financials Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you all for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.